Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of April 2nd. It's Saturday night, and with me is Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Opening day has come and gone, and I'm still here and in one piece.
It's opening weekend. You're in one piece. I'm in about two or three. I can't count, but we'll push through. It's late again.
Baby.
Yeah, it's late again in the evening, morning hours, whatever you want to call it, of Saturday night, Sunday morning. But fight on, I say. I always say keep swinging until they call you out.
And hope the umpire is blind, yeah, or has a heart and just calls you out, right, or, you know, on the mercy rule.
Well, I'm happy baseball is back. It's really fun. I didn't think I was going to be ready for it, but I was ready, and emotionally and everything, every other way. So this week for you, we've got a really, really good interview. In fact, we had an interview years ago. I actually don't remember which one it was. If it was you or me who interviewed the person, but we had a really good talk that I was excited for listeners to hear. And then I remember the talk that I had with Niger Morgan. But I suggested listeners go back and listen to this interview when we did it years ago. And this one is another one with, we've got Casey McGee of the Giants. And I just suggest that all the listeners, after you hear us talk about it, go back and listen to it one more time, because it's worth it. Listen to it at least twice. This really tops them all. So every second of it was fantastic. And I really thank you for going out and doing the interview. And this is what we do. This is why we do the podcast, is to give you guys some insight as to what these players are doing and what they're thinking, not just to talk about balls and strikes and doubles and home runs and all that stuff. And this interview really, really packs a lot of stuff in there. So we've got that. We're going to discuss opening series and a little bit more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, well, thank you for the praise, and I want to thank Casey for sitting down, as he typically does. They didn't have a long, I guess the word I used was interminable meeting prior to the Rocktown Eagles game, their final preseason game of the season, and so we sat down. And it was, you know, it's ironic. Rocktown was his first team in Japan, and I did have a few questions, you know, basically just sort of catching up and how things were going, and he kind of just took it from there, you know. It was pretty free form. It wasn't like I had this whole long list of questions. Casey just just charmed us as talking about things in general and his take on playing in Japan, which is kind of special. And let's just have a listen. Our first guest of the new season is the Giants all times double leader, Casey McGee. Nice to be with you, man.
Yeah, good to be here.
It is always good to be here.
Yeah, it's always good when a new year starts and you still got a uniform on.
Yeah, I hear you. And hopefully we'll start healthy and things will be good.
God willing, we will. We got one more. Today is our last spring training game, and then we get ready to do it for real. So hopefully we can get to the finish line healthy.
Yeah. So what's your focus in the spring training? Was this year any different from any other?
No, I had another terrible spring training.
Okay.
It seems to be my MO in Japan especially.
Okay.
I've always been somebody that kind of hits off of a feel rather than set my, you know, my hands got to be here, my foot's got to be here. Uh-huh. I've always been somebody that's kind of hit off a feel, and sometimes I think in doing that maybe it takes me a little bit longer to find that feel that I'm looking for, but once I find it, I know it, and I can kind of continue every day when I come to practice, kind of chase that feel and work to try to reinforce that good feeling.
Okay, with your mechanics. And
yeah, but thinking about more, you know, after every swing, kind of, you know, how did that feel? Did that feel long? Did that feel like I was bent over? Did that feel like I was rushing? And try to, you know, and try to go through my checkpoints until I feel like I've got my good base. So thankfully, a couple of days ago, that feeling showed up in a game. And so now,
oh, nice.
Now, and it's been staying there. Sometimes it can be fleeting in spring training. You'll think, you know, get like a false false confirmation that everything's good, and then you wake up the next day and you're like, where the hell did it go, you know?
Yeah.
Forgot to put it in my backpack on the way to the stadium today. But you know, just the other day I had a couple of bats where the feeling was there, and it's stayed. So right. I feel like I'm now finally can feel like I'm ready for the real deal.
Okay, and let me ask, when you're in BP and you've had that feeling, are you trying to reproduce that and ever? Like the first time, you know, so if you felt that way the other day, the next day in BP, are you thinking?
Yeah, just try to really, after every at bat or whatever, really try to, or in between rounds of batting practice, the way we do it is good for me because I can kind of take a quick second to kind of go through and how everything felt and realize that, you know, even in game sometimes, you know, between pitches, if I foul, you know, take a bad swing and hopefully foul it off or miss it, and get to the next pitch, be able to realize, you know, hey, maybe I was that felt funky. I think, you know, I was rushing or I was late or whatever, and try to correct that immediately, opposed to thinking about, well, my hands were 10 degrees lower than they were the last time, and I guess I'm not smart enough to do that. I just have to kind of go off of what feels right to me and what feels like I can get my bat to the ball the right way.
Okay, well, then the next question is, when you have that feel, do you go back and look at the video?
No.
Okay.
No. I try not to look at video of myself as much as I do maybe for to see a pitcher.
Okay.
When I start watching video, that's when I start getting mechanical and think, oh, why the hell did I do that or whatever.
Okay.
And that's when I start tinkering with, oh, my hands are a teeny bit lower than they were yesterday, you know, and that I haven't had much success going at it that way. I think your memory is such a good tool. And certain swings, for whatever reason, will remind me of swings past. Okay. You know, it could have been 10 years ago, okay. But there's a swing that's stuck in there.
Okay.
Like, oh, I've had that feeling before, and
right.
can imagine what that ball did coming off my bat. And so when I prepare for an at-bat, depending on, like, I try to find a pitcher that's similar to somebody that I've faced before right. or had success against before, and try to feel in my mind and imagine what that ball is going to look like coming off the barrel on a certain type of pitch or whatever it is.
Yeah. I mean, even in my limited baseball experience, I have some grasp of what you're saying. I remember trying to hit a ball, and not very successfully, but I do remember one of the times I did hit it, about three times.
Right.
I had that feeling like, you know, I could sense where the ball was going and everything was perfect.
And you almost, sometimes when you do it, you almost have a sense before you've even made contact, you can already, you know, you've hit that ball hard before, like you're tracking it, you're seeing it good, and your swing's right on time, and you can almost feel yourself hit it hard before, I don't know if it's actually physically right. possible, but in your mind it feels that way. It's like, oh yeah, this ball's hit hard. Those are the ones that are really frustrating when you get that feeling and it ends up being straight up to the catcher. But you know, I do, the older I've gotten, the more I've realized that that's kind of a key for me, is to be able to visualize and have a mental video playing, but also kind of a mental internal diagnostics almost, yeah. You know, of, hey, this is how everything felt. This was the timing of that. This was the, and I don't necessarily think of it in broke down terms, but I can imagine that. Like, I can close my eyes and imagine that just good feeling of, okay. You know, not too tense, not too loose, but everything right on time, quick, fast, getting through a ball, and just watching a line drive go right over the shortstop's head, you know.
So when you say feel, that's a feel with a capital F.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big time.
That's my biggest thing.
Interesting.
You know, there's been times that, not drastically, but depending on a certain pitcher, I'll go in and I'll move in the batter's box or even change my stance slightly just to feel like, hey, this is what this guy's going to try to do, or this is this guy's strength, and to take that from him within my ability,
right?
I need to set up a little different, or okay. I need maybe open up a little bit. I need to close off a little bit. I need to get off the plate a little bit to try to take away that strength from him.
Okay. Now, I hear you. And now, was coming to Japan, now you're facing, you know, you talked about facing similar pitchers. All of a sudden, you're facing a bunch of pitchers, a different subset of pitchers who are different from the ones you were getting that good feel with in the States. Now, how did you make that adjustment? Did you just one by one?
And try to really, like, when I picture it, the pitcher's blank. It's just a guy.
Okay.
It's not a... It's just a guy that something that a ball came out of.
Okay.
You know, it's, so I try to find somebody that has a similar arm angle, or similar set of pitches,
okay.
Or style. And, you know, of course, in Japan, there are some guys that are harder to do that with than others because there is some funkier
nice.
Motions and stuff. But really, when you strip all the, you know, like the, what do they call it, the two-step
delivery. Yeah, the leg pump.
When you strip all that away, at the end of the day, the ball still has to come out of some arm slot.
Right.
That you've seen before.
Right.
If you get rid of all the crap that
right.
builds up to that.
Right. Yeah, that's something that reminds me of Barry Larkin told me about how he hit Hideo Nomo.
Mm-hmm.
Was everybody was looking at him, and he found like an anchor in the stadium where the ball was coming out of.
Right.
And he just focused on that and ignore everything else until
exactly,
he saw the ball.
Because at some point it sounds so basic, but the game is basic and the ball's got to get from that spot to home plate.
Sure.
It's just a matter of what angle and speed it's coming at.
Okay. Now, there's a lot of people, and I get this question, or you know, even players in Japan say, ah, you know, that guy is American or Dominican, but he's built for Japan. Have you heard that? People say, oh, he should stay in Japan. He shouldn't be trying to go back to him because he can have a good living here because maybe his swing's made for Japan. And I have no idea what that is, but...
You know, it's funny you say that. I don't know what that is.
Right.
But when you see it, you know it.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know how... Like, there's... It's like a... It's not one anything you could put your finger on.
Right.
But I've said it about guys myself that, hey, like... And a lot of those guys probably could go back and have some level of success.
Right.
Whatever that is for them.
Right.
But we all have to realize, and I joke all the time, this is the island of misfit toys for foreign players,
yeah.
and we're all here for a reason.
Sure.
You know, and I think you remember the movie Shawshank Redemption?
Sure.
I was telling me and Matheson, we were talking about it the other day, and sometimes I feel like I'm Red in the movie. I'm the only guilty man over here.
Yeah.
You know, I there's a lot of guys that feel like maybe they got a short end of a stick or didn't get an opportunity. Whereas I had plenty of opportunity, I had plenty of stick, I had plenty of rope. And whatever happened led me to here, and so. But I think there's a lot of guys that they need to realize sometimes that hey, we all are imperfect players, and that's part of the reason that we're here. And there's nothing wrong with that. Nobody's a perfect player.
Exactly. There's nobody in the majors who's the perfect player.
However, you got a guy that you know. If you've got a guy that can stay here for a long period of time, I mean, maybe it wasn't your dream as a child to play baseball in Japan.
Right.
But hey, when you get older and you got a family to take care of. As much as it's not about the money, some respect it is, and you know, this money spends the same as any other money when you get home, and you can take care of your wife and your kids or whatever else needs to be taken care of. Then,
yeah.
you know, more power to you, and you get to do it while still playing a game.
Playing a game, and there's
this, at a high level.
At a high level, and there's a lot of things to be said. I mean, there's a lot of things. You know, I'm in this world, and I guess you are too, because you've been in the majors, and I'm an American, and we're constantly in that sort of friction zone between what Japan is and what it isn't, and what the majors
and
what they aren't,
and what you hope and what you wish it was.
Exactly.
And once you realize what you wish it was and what it's going to be, are two completely different animals.
Absolutely.
So it's what I say, Shogunai. What
yeah,
can you do?
Shogunai.
It is what it is, and move on from it and
it
embrace
is.
It.
Yeah.
I mean, Scott Matheson's a great example. I mean, is there any doubt in my mind he could walk into a big league field right now and go out and get people out? No doubt in my mind.
No.
However, for whatever reason, injuries and whatever else, he ended up here. And when he decides that his career is over, he's going to be able to provide for his family and realistically probably his kids' kids.
Yeah.
And, I mean, what a great career he's had, even
Absolutely.
Though it wasn't maybe what he dreamed of or what it
sure.
could have been.
Sure.
I mean,
well, oddly enough, when you, as I'll paraphrase you, when you strip it all away, it is what you dream of, which is playing ball and
exactly.
and making a living. And it's just that, you know, the surroundings are a little different than you imagine, but you know, it's the same thing. You're doing what you want to do.
And you know, I've told my son this before, and I don't even really know the context that came up, but I think he was asking me something about like how do you feel about playing in Japan after you've been in the big leagues kind of deal? And I said, look, I said, I've been very blessed to have an opportunity to play as long as I have. I said, and at one point when I was in the big leagues, there's 30 everyday third basemen in the big leagues. Whatever number you want to rank me, I was one of the top 30 third basemen in the world. Coming here, add another 12 to that. So at 30, almost 36 years old, I'm still one of the top 42 third basemen walking on the face of the earth. And that's something that you should be proud of. Yeah. You know, I mean, that's how many people can, and this is not just me, this is anybody here really that's had a level of success. How many people can walk around and say, I'm one of the top 40, whatever it is, in the world? You know, and I think sometimes people feel like this is like a punishment to be here. But no, it's really not. It's an honor, and it's a you have to be incredibly talented and incredibly dedicated to be able to make it here just like you would anywhere.
Yeah, true enough. Now, I want to talk about honors a little bit and kind of a more bad stuff. It's like every year there's weird stuff going on. But how'd you feel when you heard about Hoshino?
Oh, man. You know, I don't know this at all.
Right.
I'm just speculating, so I want to be clear about that.
Okay, but fine.
I think he was probably sick a lot longer than what people let on.
Yeah.
And I could see him kind of being a tough old bird that wasn't going to go to a doctor, wasn't going to tell anybody, was just going to fight it. And
yeah.
And, you know, if he was in any kind of pain or anything like that, then I'm glad that that's over for him. The fight is over for him in a sense. And as much as I think it's sad to lose somebody like that, he's another one that I feel like when he I'm sure at some point reflected, I hope was really proud of what he did and the way he did it, and he did it his way and he stuck to his guns and didn't care so much what everybody else thought. And so in some ways it really makes me happy just to think about, you know, I hope whenever that day comes for me, hopefully I get a chance to reflect and it's something like that where I can have some of those same feelings about the time I spent here.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I had one thing I could tell him is that, you know, I think he left baseball, not just Japanese baseball, baseball in general, better than when he got here. So that's something. And not just baseball. I think he left people's lives better than...
Yeah, I only knew him, you know, I knew him after he turned about 55 or so, and I didn't know him when he was still involved in, like, lots of physical violence that marked his early part of his career, but I, you know, it was a real honor to know him, and he was such a big-hearted guy.
He was, and you don't get that, because all people talk about is, you know, the mean streak he had.
Yeah.
But he also had a super kind, gentle, outgoing, friendly streak to him that was bigger than the mean streak.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the world of him, really. I really do. It was an honor for me to be able to be a small part of his legacy, and, you know, him to win the championship with the team that we had was really something that meant a lot to me. And I think there was a sense amongst all of us that as much as we were all happy for ourselves, it was really happy for him.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because the fact that he would share his time before games to talk about ridiculous stuff that had no meaning to anybody but me was such an honor.
He's an interesting man. But I have nothing but respect for him. He was a good man. I loved him.
Yeah, what a shock. So a lot of obviously the impact he had on Japanese baseball was I don't know. I don't have a word for it. It was oversized or supersized.
And I'm happy to see seeing these guys here is you kind of still get that same spirit with this team. You know that I feel like he was a part of starting. You know they've got that. They've got big heart. They play hard. They'll fight you tooth and nail, but they're all, you know, I mean, I know a lot of these guys, obviously, and they're all really good guys, but on the field, man, they'll fight to the last out, and they'll do anything to win a game, and I think he'd be proud to see that kind of spirit is still carried through.
Yeah, he was obviously very proud of them last year. They did a great job in the almost went to the Japan Series with, you know, even against the Hawks, and that's saying something.
No doubt, yeah. they kind of have that little engine that could mentality all the time, it seems.
All right. Well, okay, so now last question for you. You're going to take up the whole podcast, but that's all right. It's a pleasure for our listeners.
Nobody listens to me anyway.
That's my job. Well, that's our role in life, you know?
That's right.
But the obviously last year you came in and there was some talk about where you might play, and it's like, have they talked about your, you know, that versatility in camp this year? Oh, we've got enough. You can play second, and we can do
I think the idea is that I'm just going to probably play third base for now. But you know how things can go sometimes in Japan. Things can change, and things can change without warning. So, you know, whatever they ask me to do, I'll do the best I can. And, you know, I think that obviously I'm better suited to be playing third base than second base.
Yeah.
But if a need were to arise for me to do something else, I'll do my best. And, you know,
I'm still trying to figure out whose idea that was, because I asked the general manager. I thought it was just like, it's funny. He's one of these guys, when he was an analyst, before he was a general manager, he'd just talk about anything and everything.
Right.
And as soon as the general manager says, well, I don't have an opinion on anything. It's like, since when?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know whose idea that was. That's the million dollar question.
I thought it was a brilliant idea, though, to be honest. I thought,
it definitely kind of jump started our offense. We got Murata's bat in the lineup, which helped. And, you know, we just dug ourselves too big of a hole to climb out of. We tried our darndest towards the end to get out of it. We almost made it. And we just kind of had the feeling it just kind of ran out of time. But that just goes to show you that, you know, games in April and May and June are just as important as July and August.
Okay, but don't tell that to any basketball writers.
Well.
Because, you know, the fourth period is the one that counts.
Well, yeah, but if you're down 30 in the fourth, then you can forget about the fourth quarter. You might as well get your boys off their feet and rest. So it's the same thing. You know, you got to do enough to stick around, and you're not going to go run and hide from anybody, especially in this league. But you got to be within striking distance at the end.
Fair enough. Okay, well, thank you very much for your time.
Yes, sir.
Now it's time for you to go join an interminable team meeting, I suppose.
Oh, I'm sure we've got a doozy on board.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Case. Appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Yeah, can't wait to see you, buddy. Thanks a lot.
Okay, Mr. Gibson. So you're excited. Well, you know, what are you excited about?
You're not.
I mean, tell me.
You're
well,
not.
You know, I was there. And I, you know, we just had a conversation. I thought, well, okay.
You thought, well, okay. You know, when I'm having a good interview, and this was when I used to go out and report on stories and write them too, and I remember those days. I hear a player or the subject I'm interviewing say something great, and I get excited, and I can't wait to get back to the office to put it into writing to share it with the readers. Oh. And so you didn't get that feeling when you were talking to him?
Well, I was thinking, there were Rock 10 players I wanted to talk to too, so I'm thinking, okay, good, and now off to the next thing.
No way, man! That was a great interview. I mean, what had
me? He always gives me good stories, so I'm numb to it, maybe.
Okay, well, I mean, we could speak about this thing all night, so I'm just going to pick a couple points.
Yeah,
but overall, the things that he was saying and the insight and the way that he approaches each day, each game, each pitch, and all those things were just, that was compelling stuff. But just, you know, listen to how he doesn't watch film and how he talks about making subtle adjustments, and it's more about feel. I was so into that because, of course, many of you know, I played basketball. And basketball, you can go through having the right process and getting a good base on your shot and what you do with your hands at the end and all this stuff. But sometimes, you know, you do all the things right and you still don't make shots. And then sometimes you get into a rhythm or a feel, or you just feel right doing something and you have some success. And of course, these pitchers are not just, they're not pitching machines, and they're not trying to give you fastballs where you can hit them. They're trying to get your timing off, get you to look different places and all this stuff. So hearing him talk about how he makes subtle adjustments, but he doesn't watch film. You know, he says, because I don't want to get too, worried about having my hands too low here or being too close to the plate and all that stuff. That was great stuff.
Thing there. Yeah, but you know, the thing is, it's not that he doesn't. It wasn't that he doesn't. It's he tries not to do it. He tries not to.
Right.
Is what he said. So I'm thinking he doesn't always succeed.
He tries not to watch film that way. He tries not to watch the film. He tries not to avoid that. So he tries not to watch the film is basically what he's telling.
Right, but he does. He still does sometimes, but he tries not to. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's so awesome. I hope our listeners really appreciate that kind of stuff, because we talk about making adjustments, but we never get into the minutiae about what the adjustments are, like getting closer to the plate because this guy is throwing pitches in a certain area, or, you know, like he talked about, having your hands a little bit higher, or having hands lower, starting. I mean, we don't get into it because, again, I always say this, I don't think the players are going to give too much away about what they're doing because they are competing out there. But these little adjustments that they make, you know that they're making them all the time, pitch to pitch even. Like he said, trying to get contact when there's certain situations. So, you know, process is good for consistency, but sometimes I just love it. Sometimes it's just about the hits, you know, trying to make the hits. He and I probably disagree on the slide rule a lot at second base, and we're probably going to disagree for a while, but we were really locked in on this one. I like just having a good feel and being confident in that. So that was the one thing that stood out. And then also his talk about seeing pitchers as just a guy that a ball comes out of. Just, you know, just find a release point and then barrel the ball up is basically what he's saying. And I thought that was, you know, you talked about
Barry Larkin,
the Barry Larkin situation in Nomo, and he, you know, he certainly jumped on that immediately and said, yeah, you know, you forget all about the other stuff, just find where the ball's coming out and move on. You've got to set the bat in motion and make contact with the ball. So also the last thing, I guess, is him being self-deprecating at the end and saying, hey, look, we all have flaws as players. That's why a lot of us are in Japan. And, you know, I heard it from a scout a long time ago. Would you rather be a big fish in a small pond like Japan?
I wouldn't want to be a fish in a pan anywhere. You know, big pan, small pan. Just turn off that heat, baby, and put me back in the water.
Big pan, small pan. Well, there's probably some cooler areas in that big pan. But anyway, would you rather be the big fish in a small pond or you know, play in the major leagues? Everyone wants to play in the major leagues, and that's true, but everybody wants to have success, and I just love the fact that he said, you know, you don't dream about necessarily the uniform that you're having success in, you dream about the success. And those things were really compelling for me and made me really just love the every minute of this interview.
Well, again, I thank you, and that was all down to Casey. I figured the part that you liked was the bit about the feel, and I thought, you know, I understand that because that's, you know, the way he expressed it was you have images and you have certain, he has images and certain, he has a checklist. It's not 100%. You know, it's not all feel, but it's kind of, there's this and there's that and there's that. And sometimes they're fuzzy and they're things he wants to do. And sometimes they're things he's not worried about at this moment. And when everything's locked in, he knows it. And like he knows players who are ready for Japan. And I thought that was kind of interesting, too, because I remembered a conversation between Alex Ramirez. I Wayne might have been in there too. We were talking about Matt Merton in his first year, and Matt Merton saying when he came that his goal was to get 400 at bats and then prove that he could play and then go back to America.
Right.
And Wayne was goading Alex into saying, "Oh, he should stay in Japan for a long time. He's going to make a lot of money." And Ramirez said, I think his swing is made for Japan. And by that, and this is kind of what I was wanted to get to, in Alex's case, of course, being made for Japan also requires an attitude adjustment, as everybody says. as successful players, but what that attitude adjustment is for individuals can vary, but they have to get used to the fact that they're in Japan and the circumstances are different. But in Alex's case, he was talking about the fastball, the bat being quick enough, not perhaps quick enough to handle fastballs that rarely get above 92, 93 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that 88, 89 mile an hour fastball, that's, you know, the bread and butter. And even, you know, 20 years ago, I remember when the best fastballs in Japan were more like 86, 87.
Right.
And so these guys, here's the thing, a lot of these guys struggle for one reason or another in America. Now, having said that, some of them only struggled because they weren't given opportunities in America, or they didn't handle the opportunities that they had well. You know, and the common one I hear is, you know, I heard this even in regards to Shohei Ohtani. Well, of course, because he comes from Japan, and we all know about Japan because that's where Tuffy Rhodes was a star. You all remember Tuffy Rhodes. Yeah, three home runs and, you know, and bingo, he's gone. So it can't be very good, but there are issues, and I don't want to go through that whole catalog, you know, that we dig into fairly regularly here.
Right.
But,
yes.
But anyway, so Alex is talking about bat speed, you know, having a quick swing, and if you don't have the greatest bat speed, Japan's a good place for you because those fastballs are few and far between.
I remember talking to Tyrone Woods a long time ago, and he said a lot of players get labeled in the States, and yep. They don't, for example, this guy's bat doesn't do this or doesn't do that. So that's some of the ways that they, again, don't get opportunities. And what I always say is players evolve. They don't just stay the same. They either get better or they get worse. But maybe a guy doesn't hit major league pitching, or he doesn't have something at 1 year, but he can change. He can get better at it. He can work on it, but you don't get another chance. And Tyrone said, once you get labeled, this guy can't hit major league pitching, or this guy can't do that, they give up on you. And I think in Matt's case,
yeah, he could have done that. You know, after the first year, that was probably his chance to go back to America. And instead, he took a long contract.
Right. So it doesn't mean you necessarily can't play. It means those are the things you need to work on. But you know, as Tyrone said, you get labeled, that's pretty much your chance. So some of these players who might come over here, who might find success, they're probably major league caliber, but they just needed to work on something, and they needed to develop as a player. And some of them just needed to mature. And so you get a guy like Alex Ramirez, I'm quite sure he could have played in the States had he developed over there just differently. But, once he didn't get a chance, the same with Tuffy. You know, he didn't come over here Tuffy Rhodes, he got better and became Tuffy Rhodes. So, yeah.
I think that's true too. I think there's, well, I've talked about it ad nauseum, so I'm not going to do it here. Yeah, but people get opportunities and I think the bit about the labels is certainly true. People get miscast. And of course, Casey used the expression the island of misfit toys, which is Michael Lewis's line about the Moneyball A's. And I think to some degree that's also true, that people find, you know, skills, there are going to be people whose skills are a match for Japan, but it's also a mental attitude. And the other thing I thought that was interesting was the bit he mentioned about, you know, I said, how was spring? And he says, terrible, because it's what I do in Japan. I have bad spring trainings. And it that brought me back to the story he told me last year about, you know, be careful what you wish for, because he had a tremendous spring with the 2016 San Francisco Giants. And then he got hurt in the third game of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And his season went in the toilet.
I remember that story.
I was thinking, oh, okay, this is the thing. Don't worry about it. And obviously, he's. I'm sure if he didn't have that feel, he would be worried about it. But I think also the idea of you know, as you said, of having success and what is success. And there's a great expression, and I don't know who said it, which is happiness is not getting what you want, but wanting what you get.
Yeah, I remember that quote from somewhere.
Yeah, well, I'm paraphrasing it, and I've butchered it, I'm sure, but the essence being that recognize the good things and move on, and stop worrying too much about what you don't have, but what you can make with what you've got.
All right, well, like I said, we could talk about this interview all night long. I just want you guys to go back and listen to it because it just appreciate it for the great little chat that it was. Let's move on. Let's talk about some of the games, make a seamless transition, and let's start with the champions. The SoftBank Hawks are 1-1 so far as we sit here, so they have a chance to win this series in tomorrow's game. But they beat the Buffaloes 2-0 in the opener. Kodai Senga gave up no runs over 7 innings, 1 hit.
Yeah, and Yuki Nishi got a tough loss there on opening day.
You say tough loss, I say managerial loss. I was not, again, this is, I look at Fukuda and I'm wondering what it is they saw in this guy that made them want more of it. I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, this is...
Well, why was he still in the game after like 130 pitches?
Not the pitch count per se. I think it was, I had him for 124,
Okay, I wasn't watching this game, so I only looked at the pitch total and I saw he got stuck in the 8th inning, so...
Yeah, and I'm thinking, okay, well, let him load the bases, and then what... I like the old school kind of thought where, okay, well, he made the mess, let him get out of it. It's a scoreless game, blah, blah, blah. I understand, but you're trying to win games here, aren't you? I mean, you got to mix in some wins. So, yes, I'm talking about the fact that he was having a tough time late in the game, and he probably would have been better off. And I didn't know if he didn't trust the guys in the bullpen or what. It's the 8th inning. He's giving up base runners here and there. He gave up the runs with the bases loaded and 2 outs to Yuki Yanagita, a double, and that was the 2 runs, and that was it. But he started out the inning giving up a hit, and then he walked a guy. I mean, why bother? Mm-hmm. Why let him get into that trouble if he's gonna open the inning by giving up a hit? Get him out. That's my opinion. But anyway, he's the manager. They lost the game. The Hawks came up big, and Yuki Yanagita came up big, and that was good for the Hawks, and they started out strong. So on Saturday, they throw the rookie out there, Daiki Tajima, their prize rookie, their first pick in the draft last year. And I tweeted out, he does a 5 and dive, but he only allowed 1 hit. So... there's something to be said for that, and they actually end up winning the game. They win 8-4, and the thing I liked about this game, obviously, was, and I think he's going to become my favorite player, or one of my favorite foreign players in Japan, and that's Chris Marrero. And that's not only because he was kind enough to talk to us last year after that situation with the home run, where he didn't hit home plate, but because he's got such a really nice swing, and he hits a grand slam. And put the game away in the 7th inning, and I just thought that was a really nice moment. And we got to name that the double toe plate tap or whatever he does. Now he comes and he jumps on home plate with 2 feet, and he started doing that ever since that home run that wasn't a home run. And I really like it. So that's a nice moment, and the Oryx Buffaloes came away with a really nice victory, I thought, in the second game of the series there.
Yeah, I mean, I did watch. Watch a bit of that game, and showed to Takeda his vaunted curveball was kind of all over the place, and sometimes just spinning, hanging in the one that he just was missing his pitches. And then they brought in Levon Moinello, who was absolutely brilliant last year.
Yeah,
and he threw. I was surprised how much movement. This fastball, I think the speed count on it was wrong. It actually had some decent movement on it, but it was just right down the pipe, and he was just, he just put a beauty of a swing, launched that puppy way back at Fukuoka Dome. So yeah, well done. It looked like a batting practice fastball to me, but I think that it said it was 141 kilometers per hour, and it didn't move like 140. Yeah. It didn't drop enough. So I think there was something wrong with their radar gun.
Well, maybe that was the exit velocity.
Could have been.
Yeah, yeah. But
although I doubt that. I think that puppy launched a little faster than that too.
So. Yeah. And Chiba, they're 1-1 in their series. They opened up with a. They took opening day to new heights or new. They wanted to enjoy opening day as much as possible.
They savored it for 5 hours. They savored it.
Yeah, but I watched it to the end, and
oh, poor you.
No, I have to get into shape, man. I decided I'm gonna put myself through these things to make it through the series, to make it through the season. I've got, because I don't want to miss that. You know me, I like to watch the action. All the stuff about the, you know, and we'll get to that too. New stadiums and all that stuff off the field is fun, but I like the on the field stuff the most. And so this was a 3-2 victory for the Eagles in 12 innings, and a 12th inning clutch hit from Kazuya Fujita gives the Eagles the lead in the 12th inning after Yuki Matsui, the closer, blew the save in the 9th inning to really save. I mean, Takahiro Norimoto wasn't great, but he was good enough to get out of trouble every time he got into trouble, and somehow got the game to the 9th inning with only one run allowed, and Matsui blew the save, but they got out of that, and then their bullpen was magnificent, and they won the game 3-2, and it was a fantastic game, so I really liked that. And then today, on Saturday, Seiya Inoue, the man mm-hmm. called Asia, however mm-hmm. you want to say it, hits a couple of home runs, and Mike Bolsinger has a great debut with the Marines, and he wins mm-hmm. the first game for them, and the new manager Tadahito Iguchi, and mm-hmm. I thought that was a fun game for them. I watched some of that. They won it 6-2, but the thing I took away from that game, of course, we talked about. Obviously, the Marines needing the power and having to generate some kind of power. But they had 3 home runs. Inoue had 2 of them, and then Shogo Nakamura had a home run. Anyway, so they're 1-1 to start their series. And again, we have to apologize to listeners. We're going to be taping before a lot of these games, these series on the weekends end, and that's my fault. I take responsibility for that, but. I got to watch the toddlers on Monday by myself, so I can't be too sleepy. So that's the only reason. Otherwise, we'd get all these games in on Sunday. I wouldn't
just wait till they're old enough to help out with the podcast. Then we'll be good.
Yeah. So yeah, good series over there. I'm enjoying watching those games. And then finally, the Fighters, whom I think just about everybody picked to finish last or fifth. In our predictions, except for Jim, you had him finishing second. You had a couple of surprises with the Fighters finishing second in the Pacific League and the Dragons finishing second.
Doesn't mean anything.
No,
don't
I'm just.
Worry. Let's not dwell on it.
I'm not dwelling. I'm just pointing out. We're not dwelling. I'm moving along. But the Fighters.
Okay, good.
Didn't look so good in either one of their games. They lost the opener 11-2, and then they came back and lost 7-2 today, but I guess you could say the Lions look good, scoring 11 runs in the first game and 7 in the next game. So excellent work from them. Now I know that Brian Rodriguez was the first Fighters pitcher in NPB to debut on opening day as a foreign pitcher since the year 2000, but we don't know who that pitcher was. I was trying to guess names. I couldn't figure out who it was, so that'll be some homework that maybe we can look up as we move along here. But he didn't fare very well, and neither did the Fighters. And I understand you didn't see much of this game.
I didn't see any of that game. Well, sorry, I'm at work. I've got things to do. I can't watch 4 different games at the same time.
Nah, I know.
Well, I mean, one of the things about the Fighters, one of the things about the Fighters series, I guess I liked the performance they got in game 2 was Nick Martinez.
Yeah.
Yep. So that was promising. They certainly need some. Well, they need a lot of everything, but that was I think the takeaway from the fighters.
Yeah,
and the fact that Kensuke Kondo is I think now hitting 527 for the year, so he's about right where we expected
him to be. Yeah. So yeah, Nick Martinez got the start today, and against the stately named Shinsaburo Tawata of the Lions. And you know, Martinez did okay, but Tawata was just really good for them today. And Hideto Asamura and Hotaka Yamakawa each hitting their first home runs for the Lions. That was obviously a big deal. But the Lions are getting that production that you said. I remember specifically during the prediction show, you said these guys could be the best offense or that.
As they were last year.
Yeah.
They could be better.
Yeah. And so they came out swinging. So they look good. Moving to the Central League, I think the Giants-Tigers series was really compelling stuff to watch these first two games. Now, the Tigers, using their SoftBank uniforms on the opening day, beat up the Giants pretty good, 5-1. And it just seemed like the game they had a bigger than a 5-run lead or 5-1, you know, result. It seemed like it was more than that. It seemed like the Giants were just never in it. And they beat up on reigning Sawamura Award winner Tomoyuki Sugano. And it was Kosuke Fukudome who goes oppo. He goes the opposite way for the first home run in MPB this year. And then it was Yusuke Oyama, the guy we had a question on in the offseason, someone asking us what did they think about him. And I said, look, I don't know what I see a guy. He's got no upper body muscle mass. He's got no lower half that you would suggest that would say he's got a great base where you think physically he looks like a power hitter. He basically has a Chono body. Hisayoshi Chono, except Chono has more muscle mass to him and is just bigger everywhere. And I don't know about the swing and all that stuff, but the guy hits for power. And he hit a 2-run home run off of Sugano going the opposite way. And geez, I mean, they look pretty good. We had three people predict that the Tigers would win the Central League this year on our show. So they came out looking good in that first game. And Randy Messenger was awesome, and they cruised. And then on Saturday, the Giants rallied from 4-0 down against... Now, Shintaro Fujinami, he didn't give up all the runs, and he had so-so results. He went 5-plus innings, got knocked out of the game. But, you can't blame... I don't blame the loss on him, per se. He should have been... we expect more out of him, especially if he's going to be starting in the number 2 slot, but he didn't get it done. And Yomiuri's Kazuma Okamoto. Some of you might recall I was really high on him when the Giants got him in that 2014 draft, and I said he was going to be one of the big prizes that came out of that draft. And he had his first 4-hit game. He hits his first home run of the season. He has 5 RBIs, but it's about consistency for him. He's just got to be consistent. And he had a good game. Everybody, some players can have a really good game one day, but you've got to be consistent. So I look for him to be consistent. But, you know, that was kind of surprising. I thought they were going to start out 0-2. I predicted the Giants to finish last, and I wasn't expecting much from them. So that was a good surprise, I think. I everybody wants the Giants. I say this as not being a Giants fan, but you don't want to beat a Giants team that's not very good. You want to beat a team that has expectations, and you want to beat that team. And so it's good if the Giants are a good team.
Okay.
You disagree?
Well, I mean, if you don't like the Giants, it doesn't matter who's pitching. If you beat them, you'll like that. So
I think it does. I think you get a bad Giants team and you beat them.
Well, I'm thinking of it as a fan. You know,
I am too.
A team I don't like. I could care less. You
know, I am too.
I hope they lose. I hope they lose, and I hope they lose badly and ugly. I'm not like that because I don't have any teams I dislike anymore. I'm not a kid anymore. I used to hate it. You know, I used to have teams like I hope they're terrible. I hope their fans all suffer. You know, I was a mean-spirited young man. What can I say?
But well, now you're just grumpy old one now.
Indeed. Indeed I am.
No, I I look at a team and I'm like, well, I want a team that has expectations to go down in flames. You know, that's better for me as a fan. I'm not thinking as a reporter. If I were thinking as a reporter, I'd think, yeah, I want the parity in the league, and then I want to see guys using every ounce of strength and energy and ability, you know, using the mental part of the game. I don't want that. I don't want people to come out and cruise. That's no fun.
Okay.
So, all right.
Okay, Pablo.
Speaking of cruising, the Yakult Swallows cruised in the first two games against the Bay Stars, and that's kind of shocking.
Yeah, they had two. Well, first of all, they got some good pitching.
And, yes, they did.
They got some good pitching. David Buchanan and Masanori Ishikawa. And then they got the comeback kids. Shingo Kawabata, they got two Swallows that didn't play last year for them.
Yeah.
Shingo Kawabata had a big game in the first game. The 2015 batting champ didn't play last year. He had back surgery. And he came back and he hit a home run, I think, in his first at bat. And then today, on Saturday, Norichi Aoki and the guy I don't know if I was dissing him. I meant to diss him, and I dissed the wrong player, and that was Hiroka, the Swallows' young shortstop, and he did what he did, which is he drove in some runs, but he was on base too, which is not what I expect from him. I meant to talk about Hiroka, the shortstop. I ended up talking about Yamazaki, the outfielder. I get the two confused because they're kind of not really young, but relatively new Swallows, who the team has high hopes for. It was an interesting series. I guess the biggest surprise was seeing, you know, we were wondering, you know, what are the Swallows going to do with Norichi Aoki? You know, where's Tomotaka Sakaguchi going to play? And the answer is first base. You know, this is a Haruki Ihara move. Let's take the fast guys who can play defense and put them at first base where their speed and defense is of limited value.
Yeah.
but we'll take the wins. Okay.
Yeah. Kawabata hit the home run in the third inning in his second at bat. Oh, and so, yeah. 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 But yeah, the comeback kids, you got Aoki who batted cleanup.
I know. It's like, where else could he do that except Samurai Japan and the Yakult Swallows?
So, yeah, he's 36, 37. He's in center field. He's batting cleanup. This is wild stuff.
And this is something he wasn't good enough to do before he went to the majors.
Right.
I'm not saying like he got a lot better.
Yeah.
I'm sure he did get better in some ways, but no.
But hey, they're 2-0, and you know.
Yeah, good. Let's stop the season now. Quit while we're ahead.
Quit while you're ahead. All right. Then
I have an answer to your trivia question.
Oh, okay.
The immortal Bob Wolcott he started the 2000 season for the eventual last place Kintetsu Buffaloes. Masataka Nashida's first opening day pitcher was Bob Wolcott.
Wow!
And they lost 4-0 to the Oryx Blue Wave.
Wow. So that's Brian Rodriguez of the Fighters was the first pitcher since...
Bob Wolcott of the Fighters. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thanks for looking that up while we were talking. Okay. So great. Hey. And then just to let you know, Ishikawa had lost 11 straight. He was on a personal 11-game skid dating back to last season. So he stopped that skid with his 6.6 2/3 innings today. So
He wasn't opening day, but he's kind of been an opening day success story for the Swallows. I mean, he hasn't done a lot, but he's been good on opening day for sure.
Yeah, okay. And then there were the Carp and the Dragons, and the Dragons look as bad as we expected. And the Carp looked pretty good. 6-3 on Friday they win, and 6-2 today on Saturday. So,
did you notice that both of the teams I picked to finish second are 0-2?
I think I just brought that up. Okay. You said don't dwell on it. You told me.
Well, I was thinking that one of the teams I picked was actually doing well, and I guess that was wrong. Okay.
Hey, look, it's 2 days in. There's nobody's wrong, nobody's right. It's just a start. So.
Oh, that's such a new age fuzzy warm. I feel all warm and fuzzy now.
Oh, good. Well, you might be feeling a little bit better than the people in Dragon's Land feel, because I don't think it's... while it's just a start, it might be the way they finished.
Hashtag high heat.
And the Shuhei Takahashi thing at second base, I mean, he just doesn't have a lot of speed. So I saw a couple of times where there were some foul balls, some pop fly foul balls that they didn't get to, and gave Seiya Suzuki an extra swing because they didn't get to one of the pop flies. And this is going to be a long year with him at second base if that's really the plan. So, Dragons, yeah. Yeah. But the Carp, like I said, looked pretty good. So, yeah.
Scored a lot of runs, as they're going to do.
Yep.
And Seiya Suzuki came back, and that was nice to see. And, you know, the Carp, when they're healthy, they got no room for Alejandro Mejia. You know, it's like, where are we going to fit these guys in? I mean, Xavier Batista and Alejandro Mejia, and where can we put them?
Well, this is when they're healthy.
Becoming. Well, yeah, but I'm saying that in a sense, the Carp are becoming SoftBank.
Yeah, they've got a lot of talent, a lot of depth, and not a lot of room to play everybody every day. But again, I anticipate they'll have their share of injuries, so these guys are going to get some playing time. All right, a couple of notes. One, Sapporo Dome will no longer be the home of the Fighters in 2023. They, on Tuesday, officially announced that they will be building a new facility, a new stadium. Now, this is going to be an outdoor... It's not going to be a dome, right? It's going to be a stadium.
It's going to be... Well, it's going to be a natural grass stadium that can be covered.
Okay. So not really a dome, but it's going to have a roof. And they announced on Tuesday that they are going to build that in Kita Hiroshima in Sapporo. Yep. So, yeah, really... Well, I'm sorry, Kita Hiroshima in Hokkaido.
Yeah. It's a neighboring city, and the new location's about 5 kilometers from the current location.
Yeah, it's not that far. But I remember when Nagoya Stadium went down or was no longer the main stadium for the Dragons, and they moved to Nagoya Dome on the other side of town. Wasn't that far. Another place that was probably about 5 kilometers, maybe 10, but away from the other one.
That's about,
maybe about 10, I think. And
it's not like you're going to get from point A to point B. You got to take, instead of taking the subway to Sapporo Dome, people will drive and/or they will just take JR because it's a short walk from JR. And apparently they're going to build a new station that's even closer to the ballpark.
Right, right.
And the other thing is that the guy who's in charge of the whole project is one of my favorite people, is Toshimasa Shimada, the Fighters. He retired.
Oh, did he? Yeah, I call him the front office guy, yeah.
Yeah, the essentially the team CEO. Well, he turned 60 and
step aside.
Retirement age, yeah. Right? So he is now in charge of the company that's managing the Kita Hiroshima Stadium project.
Right, right. So I think this, you know, obviously Sapporo Dome wasn't built for baseball. I heard. I understand it was built for as a soccer stadium, but also to be reconfigured for other sports, including baseball. And so it works as in some respects, but in other respects, it doesn't. The fans are kind of far away from the field.
Yeah.
The fences are really high around it, so it's not very fan-friendly in that respect. So I hope the new facility is really more modern and more of a baseball-type stadium. But I don't think Sapporo Dome is going to be completely empty. I still think they're going to be playing soccer matches up there. It's probably...
Well, sure.
It won't be a white elephant, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't think they can afford to keep it up with just Consadole Sapporo playing in the J-League there. So, and Sapporo's going, in fact, the mayor of Sapporo said, we want to invite other teams to play here. And the Fighters would be going like, ah-ha-ha-ha-ha. No, I don't think so, because they have the right to Hokkaido, so they can basically keep any team from playing in Hokkaido. And as you know, people don't play in Hokkaido except the Fighters anymore. The Giants, I think, were welcome, but they stopped drawing fans. People don't want to go and see teams that aren't the Fighters.
Right, right.
And it's going to be a big move for them, because this is the interesting thing, is becoming the thing in Japan for teams to to own their own stadiums for a variety of reasons, the biggest of which is that they get to keep the advertising, you know, the stadium advertising.
Right.
And concessions revenue. Mm-hmm. You know, when the fighters sell a fighter's t-shirt, when a fighter's t-shirt is sold at Sapporo Dome, how much money do the fighters get? They get the commission, you know, they get the wholesale price.
Okay.
They sell to the store.
Right.
And the store keeps the profit and gives it to the city of Sapporo. That's why when you walk to Sapporo Dome, you'll see a big fighter's shop outside the stadium. And right. Same with Jingu. The same with Jingu. There's swallow shops outside the stadium because, you know, as you on your way to Jingu Stadium, because those ones, those profits go 100% to the swallows.
Right, right.
Anything they sell in the park, basically the ballpark's owners, Meiji Jingu and Tokyo, I believe Shinjuku Ward, get to keep those.
Right.
So that's the thing. They can't make money at Sapporo Dome, so they're going to get a park. And between the concessions revenues and the ticket revenues and the fact that they won't be paying, you know, they'll be paying maintenance instead of rent and all the other little subsidies they're going to get, they'll probably pay for that park in like 4 years.
Yeah, very quickly.
Then they're going to be rolling in money.
Right. So, yeah, it's... You know, the immediately I started thinking about, because Sapporo Dome is a beautiful facility. It's not like they have to move, but they're doing it for financial reasons. But there are some teams out there, and after watching the Dodgers and the Giants, the Dodgers and the Angels at the end of preseason the other night, where a pipe burst at Dodger Stadium and there was sewage leaking all over the place, I started thinking, what about some other facilities in Japan that could probably use a makeover, or some other teams that could use a new facility? And so I immediately, the Tigers are the club that came to mind for me, because I love Koshien, and it's a beautiful stadium, but the bowels of that building are just old. And
wait, really? When's the last time you were at Koshien?
Not recently, but I mean, still, they can't remake the entire under back part of it. I know they did
Now under it's beautiful inside now. It's all gleaming and white, and you don't have that beam that's like 5.5 feet off the ground when you're going down to the ground, and that was made to smack my cranium.
Yeah,
that's gone.
But the whole stadium too.
It's much nicer than it used to be. I mean, yeah, much the press nicer, seats but are it's still really kind of lousy.
Old.
But,
yeah, yeah, it's old. But, it's old. It's it. There's no. I
it
mean,
it is old.
It could use an upgrade. So I thought that was one, the Tigers. And obviously Jingu has, I mean, we've got plans in the works
Jingu,
in Tokyo.
They're going to tear down
as soon as
the Olympics are over. So, yeah.
Right. There's plans for that. So that was another one. But I know that that's going to change. And then I also thought the Lions could consider a new facility. That one's getting kind of old. And so could the Bay Stars. They're not really decrepit.
Well, they're remodeling. They're going to remodel Yokohama Stadium substantially. And in fact, I don't know when they're going to add these extra seats, but I expect them to have a natural grass before the 2020 Olympics and to do some stuff opening up the stadium so you can see more of the city and adding on seats down the lines. I believe that plan has already been announced at Upper Deck.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that I think these stadiums are decrepit and that I don't want to go. It's just that they just need new facilities. I mean, I like newness.
I think Yokohama. I mean, I'm not really an escalator person, but I'm not an escalator or elevator person. But Yokohama, I mean, you get older guys. You know, I remember.
The press seats at Yokohama went from the first floor to the very top of the stadium, you have to climb these stairs that are basically...
Yeah, they make they make those steps at Seibu Dome look like amateur hour. They're like the starter set.
Yeah.
It's probably 200, 300 steps up to the press box.
And the stairs are, it's like they've stacked a bunch of, I don't know any other way to describe it, a bunch of caskets on top of each other. So they're very deep. And so you have to really, it, it, it's, it, it's, it's a chore going up these stairs to get to the top.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the important thing. Us writers and the inconveniences we go through.
Yes, I know. But I wanted the listeners to understand why you were complaining about it. So, I mean, we had to tell them. And also, I say stacking these caskets because, and you say old men, and there are a lot of older reporters, and a lot of people could die on the way up these stairs
going
to the press facility.
Well, I know some of the older guys who just don't come, you know, like the analysts, some of the former manager things who won't ever go to cover a game in Yokohama now.
Yeah, I don't blame them. Yeah, when I go there, I go light, and I carry my bag around because I'm not going up those stairs. It's too much. So yeah, if I have to go there in the future to cover a game, I'll go up there one time to set my computer down, and then one time at the end of the game. That'll be it. The rest of the time I'll spend on the field. Let's move along. We wanted to acknowledge Shohei Ohtani's first start in the major leagues, and got a hit in his first at bat. Everyone, I'm sure, has seen it, and I like that. But the thing that I noticed that he said in the post game presser, he said, "Well, yeah, the fact that there was a runner on, and that the right side of the field was open was the key to me getting that hit, because he basically grounded out to the same spot two times and struck out another couple times after that. So yeah, he got the hit, but he still hasn't impressed with the bat. I hope he impresses with his start. It'll be Monday in Japan, so about the time we're posting this is about the time the game will be over.
I think he hit the ball hard twice, which was okay. The other time I didn't see the second ground out of which you speak. But I thought, yeah, he's looked a little better as the spring's gone on. You know, it's just going to take time. So I'm okay with where he is right now.
Okay.
I thought it was interesting that Ron Darling was saying on the air the other day that basically he didn't belong in the majors, and the only reason he was suggesting that the only reason he's in the majors is because they had a secret agreement with the Angels that he would begin the year on the first team on the major league squad.
Maybe he knows something.
Maybe he does. Maybe Ron Darling knows something. I'll bet you he does.
Well, I was having a chat with someone at our office, and he said, well, he's had such a really bad preseason, he hasn't earned a spot. And I said, well, one of my friends told me he's all over a bunch of posters.
Oh yeah.
And that they used him in the marketing. Yeah.
Yeah, well, when you go, I mean, he's on the tickets, and and on the when you go to Diablo Stadium in Tempe, where they worked out when you get off the freeway on the street, you know, where they've got the Angels banners up, the first one you see is Shohei Ohtani, So, and they're also, he's the only Angels player with his personalized Angels cap. Other than Mike Trout, they have an Angels cap with a fish sticking out of it. That's the Mike Trout hat. And his, they have one that's an Angels cap with Shohei Ohtani's name in kanji.
Oh, beautiful. So, yeah, I'm like, yeah, there's no way they're going to bring him over and then put him on the farm with that kind of hype. So, it could be. It could be. All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And we will be back next week, obviously, and talk about more of the first week of baseball. Anyone who has a question, send it to us on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. You can also send comments. You don't have to send a question. You can send questions by email or comments or suggestions even to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com, or you can look us up on the Facebook page and leave us a comment there. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your opening week.
See you at the ballpark.